Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Fast Forward Radio is an audio production of The Speculist, and you can find us online at speculist.com. That's speculist.com. Or you can go straight to the blog at blog.speculist.com. At The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio, we talk about what's happening in the world today and where the world is going, and we take a pretty unusual view of those matters. We believe that the world might just be getting better all the time. We believe that if you're not excited about the future, you're not paying attention, and we think that something is going to happen, something wonderful. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-futurist, co-blogger, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
I'm super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
I'm psyched about tonight's show.
We got a big one tonight, and we're going to jump right into it. But first, of course, we have to say hello to Michael Darling, our chat host, who is with us this evening.
Hey, all.
Michael, you got a big job tonight because you're going to be gathering all the ideas we're going to be collecting in the second half of the show. So get ready. We're going to get a bunch of ideas for things to do at Convergence 08. So I hope you're in good typing form tonight.
I'm going to make them up if there's none provided.
Great, thanks. That's the spirit. Okay, well, let's jump right into it. We've got two very special guests with us this evening, both of them good friends of Fast Forward Radio. First off, I want to introduce Christine Peterson. She is the president of Foresight Nanotech Institute. Christine writes, lectures, and briefs the media on coming powerful technologies, especially nanotech. She's the founder and vice president of Foresight Nanotech Institute. I just said she's the president of that, so I guess she wears more hats than just the one there. For those who aren't familiar, Foresight educates the public, the technical community, and policymakers on nanotechnology and its long-term effects. Christine also serves on the advisory board of the International Council on Nanotechnology and the editorial advisory board of NASA's Nanotech Briefs and on California's Blue Ribbon Task Force on Nanotechnology. Christine, welcome back to Fast Forward Radio.
Oh, great to be here, Phil.
Always a pleasure and an honor to have you on the show. Now, did I get that wrong? You're not both the president and a vice president, are you? Or do you?
I alternate. I go back and forth. At the moment, it's president.
Okay. All right. So I had it right the first time. So I'll try to clean up my introductory text here that I keep for our recurring guests. Now, our next guest is PJ Manny. She's a writer and futurist and a leading voice in the H+ movement. PJ has written extensively on transhumanism and related topics as well as for television. Especially important to Stephen is that she was on the Xena Warrior Princess program in Hercules Legendary Journeys.
Of course.
PJ has a novel under development. I've been saying that for some time, so at some point I'm going to say PJ has just finished or will be signing her novel here. But we're not to that point yet, I don't think, but stay tuned. Now, PJ is the chairman of the board of directors of the World Transhumanist Association, or am I supposed to just say H+ now?
You're supposed to just say Humanity Plus.
Excuse me. Let me try again. PJ is the chairman of the board of directors of Humanity Plus, and she's a senior associate at Foresight Nanotech Institute, and she's on the scientific advisory board for the Lifeboat Foundation. Plus, she's a frequent guest and regular contributor to this program. PJ, welcome back to Fast Forward Radio.
Thank you very much, guys. It's always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure to have you here. So we have a charter this evening. We want to talk about the upcoming Convergence 08 event. And what I would like to do, if I could, is I want to get into this from the standpoint of a senior associate with Foresight Nanotech, because this is how I've come to learn about this event. And to me, this is what's happening this year instead of the Vision Weekend, or is it in place of the Vision Weekend, or is this what the Vision Weekend has evolved into? So just to get some background on that, Christine, could you lead us through the evolution that's occurred here to get us to Convergence 08?
Well, Phil, as you know, for many years now, Foresight has had a Vision Weekend for our Senior Associate members. And last year, one of our Board of Directors members, Brad Templeton, said, look, let's change the format. Let's do an unconference. And in an unconference, the people attending do a lot of the self-organizing. They can actually step up and volunteer to give talks. They can lead their own discussions. Basically, an unconference takes all the wonderful discussions that normally take place in the hallway and give them a room and a name and a time so that everyone at the conference can take advantage of these spontaneous discussions. So it went fabulously well last year. And so this year, we wanted to do it again, but we wanted to broaden it out. So now we've got six forward-looking organizations all coming together as supporting organizations for this conference. And it's just going to be an amazing event, I think.
So this is not a matter of Foresight joining up with an event that was already occurring. There wasn't a Convergence 07, or was there?
No, this is the first Convergence, and to some extent there'll be some continuity with last year's unconference that Foresight ran. But we've got a number of other really excellent nonprofits involved this time because we wanted to bring in other elements of future technologies rather than just the Foresight perspective. So it's going to be bigger than what Foresight can do on our own.
Well, I note that the topics when you go just to the front page of the website for Convergence 08, the topics are nanotech, biotech, cogtech, and infotech. And these are definitely all topics that we've seen discussed, heard discussed at Vision Weekends in the past. So this is a deliberate effort, I guess, to kind of broaden the scope and to officially incorporate all these different ideas rather than have them discussed sort of on the side at a nanotech conference?
Well, what has been happening in the past few years is that a number of these organizations that are all looking at future technologies have been saying to each other, look, we want to come together more. We want to collaborate more. These ideas do not operate separately. All these future technologies are going to interact. And you can't really envision a future that makes sense unless you pull all of this together. So rather than have, say, six separate small conferences, we said, now look, let's just pull it all together. Let's have one big one in a collaborative way. And so far, it's just been wonderful.
It's interesting that the relationship between the different topics is something that I've noticed at these events in the past, and it's kind of a driver behind what we do at the Speculist and the kinds of things we talk about on Fast Forward Radio as well. It's hard to talk about nanotech, for example, in complete isolation because as soon as you start talking about it, you get into this, well, is it wet or dry? And if it's wet, then it's kind of like biotech, right? Or if you get to talking about artificial intelligence, definitely one of the paths towards artificial intelligence would be the kind of computing power that eventually nanotechnology will provide us. So rather than looking at these ideas in isolation as silos, the idea here is let's bring all this let's converge all these different ideas and have a real conversation amongst the different fields.
That's exactly right, Phil. That's the perspective that we all had, and we said, look, we want to bring this together in one big event. So that's what Convergence 08 is going to be.
It sounds very exciting. I'm really looking forward to being there. And PJ, tell us a little bit about how you came to be involved in it and what are you currently doing with Convergence 08?
Well, our organization, Humanity Plus, was one of those organizations, as Christine was saying, that wanted to get together and talk about this in a group. We realized that fields are converging and our organizations could greatly benefit by all joining together and pooling our resources, if you will. None of us are extremely large and powerful organizations, so getting together was a smart idea at many levels.
And what are you personally doing? You have a role related to the event yourself. Is that
what
right?
I'm personally doing is basically learning a whole hell of a lot from Christine on how you run one of these events.
Okay.
And helping out in that matter, but also helping with the media, the positioning of our message, things like that. And hopefully I'll also be hosting and emceeing the event as well.
Now, I see that the supporting organizations are Foresight Nanotech Institute, Humanity Plus, minst.org, the Singularity Institute for Artificial Intelligence, the Long Now Foundation, the Methuselah Foundation, and something I'm not familiar with, am I going to pronounce this correctly if I say CyBRev? Is that CyBRev?
You know, no one has ever actually pronounced it to me either, so
yeah.
It sounds good to me.
Sounds right.
It's something like, that's phonetic, but if I said it horribly wrong, if I mangled the pronunciation, I apologize, and I will make up for it after meeting these folks in person in a couple of weeks. So how did we pick these organizations, and what's the difference between the supporting organizations and the cooperating organizations?
Christine, do you want to take this?
Phil, when you ask these questions, go ahead and say who you want to answer.
Oh, sorry about that.
Yes.
I was just throwing it out. It's a nun show, you know. Stephen, what do you think? What's the difference?
No idea. Let's ask Christine.
What's the difference between a supporting organization and a – because I see some usual suspects down there in the cooperating organizations too, the kinds of folks that are normally represented at you know, if you go to the Singularity Summit or if you go to the Vision Weekend, you see folks from a lot of these different groups. I was just wondering, what's the difference between those that are supporting and those that are cooperating?
Well, the main difference is that the ones under supporting either put in a great deal of time or substantial financial contributions, whereas the folks down in cooperating are also great folks, but for whatever reason, they weren't able to do either of those. And so they're mainly putting in assistance in terms of getting the word out.
I see. Okay. So, but we can probably expect to see representatives or members from those groups at the event as well.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, okay. Now, you know throwing this out to whoever wants to respond, or if no one does, that's okay. But it occurs to me that Lifeboat Foundation ought to be on there. I wonder what happened to those guys.
PJ, do you know? I don't know.
I don't remember. I think that probably is an oversight. And the funny part is that so many people within all of these organizations are also members of Lifeboat.
Right.
That
lots of overlap.
It's tons of overlap in that particular organization. So yeah, I think honestly, it's probably an oversight, and thanks for making it public, Phil.
Well, I didn't like that. I was just curious. But of course, yeah. I mean, the point's well made that you get a bunch of people from these various organizations together, and there's going to be a lot of folks from Lifeboat there because we all have connections into Lifeboat. I mean, I'm a member of Humanity Plus. I'm a senior associate with Foresight. I do some blogging for Lifeboat. I mean, most people who are part of one of these things are involved in three or four others as well. Isn't that fair to say, I think, probably?
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about the unconference methodology and exactly how that unfolds. But before we do that, let me say that this is Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We're talking about Convergence 08, and we're going to be gathering your ideas for what could be happening in just a couple of weeks in California when a bunch of very interesting people get together, like-minded folks and some differently-minded folks, and talk about the future. So if you'd like to join our conversation, we've got live chat, or you can give us a call at 347-215-8972. So, Christine, let's step through the idea of an unconference and how that differs from a conference, because one thing I notice when I go to the website is there are speakers listed. So it's not a completely spontaneous, wholly just volunteer kind of a thing, and yet most of the program is not yet filled out. So what's the relationship between the formal speakers and the other portion of the event, which is just kind of organic and occurs on its own?
Yeah, the unconference portion of this event is spontaneous. It is designed during the event itself. You can see a preview of it by looking on our wiki, where where people who want to lead a session or give a talk can volunteer to post their topic right now, so you can get a feel for the kinds of things that will be going on during the on-conference portion. Foresight last year and Convergence this year are doing kind of a hybrid meeting. I really feel it's useful to have at least some part of the meeting that sets the tone, that establishes some kind of shared knowledge base, and shows the kind of topics that we want to have covered. So we have four plenary sessions. Technically, these are not very unconference-like, but we found it worked really well last year for the Foresight Vision Weekend, so we decided to do it again this year. So we've got three debates and one keynote where the entire group comes together in a more organized way.
And is there a time relationship between that? Do we do all the debates and the keynote up front, and then it becomes kind of a free-for-all, or is it mix and match, or how does that work?
So each day we open with a plenary and we close with a plenary. So you open as a big group, then you break out into the unconference format for most of the day. At the end of the day, we come together again.
Oh, okay. So let's talk a little bit about the three debates. These look very interesting. The debate topics are synthetic biology, artificial intelligence, and longevity intervention. Now, how did we decide on those three topics? How did those three become kind of the headline debate topics for the event?
Well, what we did was we looked at what were the hottest topics. Certainly, synthetic biology is a very hot topic right now. All of our organizing groups are very interested in longevity and life extension issues, so that was not a question. And, of course, AI is relevant across the board. I mean, all of these technologies are going to be highly impacted by how well software is doing. And then, of course, for our keynote, we were very pleased to be able to get Paul Saffo, who is quite a well-known, or I'll say famous, actually, forecaster, who looks at the long term. And he when he looks long term, he looks decades out, which is what we need for this conference. So we were very pleased to be able to get Paul to come as the keynoter.
Yeah, that'll be great. I'm really looking forward to hearing him speak and seeing him in person. And if you go to the website, we'll be providing the link for those who are listening in our program notes. And of course, we've already got a link to the Convergence 08 website up on the Speculus. But if you look at that list of the speakers, if you look at who's going to be participating in each of these debates, plus Paul Saffo there as the keynote speaker, this is a great lineup of real talent and genius. I think you would have to say these are some of the smartest people you're going to run into anywhere. And to see them in action, to see them interacting with each other, is just a real treat. I mean, it's a rare opportunity to get to experience something like this. And I think for the I don't want to just be crass, but I mean, for the money you guys are asking for to attend this thing, it's really quite a bargain.
I'm convinced. I think I'll buy a ticket and I'll get on the airplane right now.
Okay, well, we've sold one.
We should certainly hope so.
That's right.
Yeah, no, I was looking at the registration. It seems like, I mean, you know, for an event like this, you would expect to. You would expect to have to pay out quite a bit more to attend something like this. I think it looks really exciting. Looks like a great lineup. Well, let's get into some of the possible ideas that might be discussed. Michael, have you fed that instruction out to our chat room yet, that we're collecting ideas for the unconference?
It has been fed.
Okay, and you've got lots of ideas you're ready to come back with?
Not yet.
Can I just jump in here for one second, because I do want to make one point that I think is really important, because it was so illuminating for me last year about the whole unconference format, and that is how enthusiastic and how creative and generative this format is. So you have these fantastic plenary speakers, which we can all come up with ideas that we want to do before we get to the conference. But what's so great is you can come up with those ideas that are generated by what you're experiencing at the conference. And of all the formats that I've ever experienced and all the conferences I've ever gone to, this particular format is the most exciting, the most enjoyable. I literally leave with an adrenaline high unlike any other kind of thing I've ever attended, because you really feel like you've made significant, not just personal progress, but group progress.
That's a great point, PJ. One of the things that I enjoyed about the unconference format last year was just the fact that the level of participation that as an attendee that you get to engage in is just unlike anything I've ever experienced before. It's great to go to a conference and to hear a lot of exciting ideas and to to have your world opened up with concepts you haven't considered before, but to actively engage with others, you know, to be part of the conversation, to even actually have the opportunity, if it's appropriate, to stand up and lead a session, was really unique. I mean, I had never encountered anything like that, and I would absolutely second what you said. It is quite a rush. It's a very exciting time, and I don't think I've ever encountered anything quite like it before.
Last year I know there were a number of people who attended who were very skeptical about the format and couldn't imagine that anything constructive at a high level could occur in such a free-form format. And by the end of it, they were all converts. They drank the Kool-Aid. They got it. And it was fantastic. Just the energy in that room by the end of the weekend was phenomenal.
It really was. It was absolutely amazing. And I would have to list myself as, I try not to be closed-minded about things, but when the unconference idea was first explained, I thought, we're doing what exactly? I mean, how's this going to work? And to see it come together was just it's just an amazing process and loads of fun.
Phil, I should mention that the reason it has worked so well at the ones I've attended, I think, is because it builds on the quality of the participants. In other words, if you get interesting people together, interesting smart people all together in one unconference facility, they will self-organize into something wonderful. It probably wouldn't work if you didn't have such great people. And so I think a lot of it has to do with the quality of the participants themselves.
I would agree with that. That makes a lot of sense. There's something almost magical about, I don't know, getting really engaged, really intelligent people together who have an interest in these ideas, have a passion for these kinds of topics, and to see them bouncing ideas off of each other, to see two different ideas start to form into something completely new. It's an amazing and really exciting process.
And it's also a great opportunity for people to bring their own current projects and we encourage people to bring their current projects, bring demos, working apparatus, whatever it is they want to bring, and showcase these things or alpha and beta on our group, because you couldn't get a better audience with better critiques for your information than this kind of a format. Because the people who are there, who are attending your talk, want to be there, and they want to help you with your project. And the feedback is incredible.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, is that if you come with an idea, if you come with something that you're currently developing or that it occurs to you while you're there that this is something you'd like to talk about, when you have your session, the people who come to that are people who've looked at that and chosen that topic from several others that are available at that time. So you're bringing together people who are as interested in what you're talking about as you are.
Exactly.
Phil, we got David Ray has got a very interesting idea for a topic.
All right.
Covering,
what do we got?
What about a discussion room? He asks, in which participants stand up to speculate how and when their own jobs will be made obsolete, but not in a doom and gloom kind of way. More of a how technology X will affect my industry.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so people stand up and talk about when their jobs will be made obsolete. The idea being not because they're moaning or complaining about it, but just from a standpoint of trying to get a handle on how automation and other societal change is changing the workplace. What do you think, Christine? Would an idea like that work at the UN conference?
Oh, absolutely. And I would encourage anyone who has a cool idea like that to go on the wiki and add the topic. Now, I believe you do need to register, of course, first in order to do that. But once you do register, you are given the login and the password to get into that wiki. And what you do is you just go in there, you put down the name of the topic, a description of the topic, and your name, and boom, you're rolling.
All right. Okay, David Ray. So you can find a link to the website at the Speculist. You should include that one on the wiki. That sounds like a winner. Although it occurs to me as I think about that one, a lot of the folks there are in these very advanced kinds of forward-looking futurist kinds of jobs. So their jobs might be around longer than some other people's. Or perhaps not. I don't know.
I think everyone's job will change. Maybe the people at the unconference will have some idea, though, about the changes that are coming. More so, they'll be more aware of it, perhaps.
Well yeah.
Certainly, someone like Paul Saffo will always have job security because there's always future.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah, if you're Paul Saffo, you know, or you know, if you do the kinds of stuff we do. There's always something to look ahead to, you know. I guess until we get to the singularity, you know, there's always work for futurists. But that's a great one, Dave. Thanks for contributing that. Michael, what else we got going on out in the chat room?
That was the one idea so far, although I should say the one actual idea.
Phil, this is Chris. Just to build on that last idea. One of the main things you can do at these events is work on your own career and try to position yourself to be kind of later in that sequence of when people get laid off. I'll give you two examples. At a Foresight Vision weekend a few years ago, Ray Kurzweil met Terry Grossman, and they went on to write a book together. Then last year, one of our senior associates happened to mention that he was interested in doing computational nanotechnology software. And I was able to say, well, but have you talked to these other folks here who have a company doing that? Are they aware of your interest and your skill set? And he said, I guess not. And so we marched right over there, and next thing I knew, he was working for that company. So
amazing.
I think it's important for people to go there, go ahead and make it clear to everybody what they want, because if you make it clear what you want, people will try to help you get it.
That's a great point.
I have to say that, yeah, that was certainly my experience. And whether it was looking for research for the book or even just, you know, other areas that I'm considering expanding into, it was not only eye-opening for my own career, it was a wonderful networking and contact opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think we met for the first time at that event. Isn't that right, TJ?
We did. Yes, we absolutely did. You introduced yourself, and how could I resist?
Not said. I mean, the rest is history. So. You want to meet somebody wonderful
happens,
like me, you got to go to the training then.
I was going to say, what happens at the unconference stays at the unconference.
Oh, no. That's why we have a podcast. So get out there. But I love your point, Christine. I think that's great. If you want to avoid obsolescence, if you want to move ahead with your career, look at this event as a means of doing that. I think that's terrific. What else we got, Stephen? I believe you had some thoughts for topics that might sort well with the unconference.
Well, I was just kind of combing through just some of the latest news, and really looking for nanotech things to talk about with our guest tonight, and. Just for example, You're Better All the Time that you published, what was that, a couple of days ago, Phil?
Yesterday. Mm-hmm.
Okay. There was three things in there that, were that were nanotech related. I mean, pretty much everything in the Better All the Time, every time, every story in there would actually work as a subject at the unconference because it's not just nanotech anymore. But these three, you know, the printing organs, which is basically kind of a fab lab idea of printing whole organs. And in that particular article, it was talking about printing a heart.
Right.
Bucky paper I thought was is fascinating. It's carbon linked together like basically in diamond type formations that I mean you could use to armor your car or your airplane or I mean the things that Bucky paper could be used for. You know, it's just amazing. Material science is going to just explode in the next few years, and so that's kind of exciting as well.
Absolutely. Well, I can see the discussion of printing human organs fitting in very well with the synthetic biology debate that will be going on. And of course, Bucky paper is the kind of thing that has been discussed at the Foresight Vision Weekend, I guess, ever since probably they've been. They've been having it, but these kinds of forward-looking, it's not even as forward-looking now because now it's like they have Bucky paper. I mean, Christine, I would imagine that when you first started having the Foresight Vision Weekend, that was something that was being predicted, right? It wasn't something that existed at that time. It was people were saying, well, in a few years we might have this stuff that you can do something like that with.
Well, absolutely. We've been having vision weekends for certainly over 10 years, I think maybe 15 years. So definitely, in the early days, it was all projections. Now we're starting to see some of these things come along. And of course, as you know, what's the type of nanotechnology that Foresight is most interested in is the more advanced type, the molecular machine systems that could build with atomic precision.
Right.
So, that, you know, that is still projections, but the progress that has been made in over the 15 years gives us a lot of confidence that we will get where we want to go.
Christine, the word is that Neil Gershenfeld blew a lot of minds at the Singularity Summit about a week ago with his talk on exactly that, basically programming matter and how far they've come in, and being able to just on a macro scale getting close to the point where you can organize from the bottom up and how much progress has been made.
Well, I can believe it. I was at the summit, but I was out doing the hallway discussions that an unconference facilitates better. So I can never just sit in an auditorium and listen to about 12 talks in a row, no matter how fantastic they are. But I'm familiar with his work, and absolutely, programmable matter is a phrase to watch, and it's a very inspirational goal, and I think we're gradually getting there. So, I would say definitely track that. Set your web search engine alerts so that you get deliveries on programmable matter, because that's the goal, certainly.
There's a name for this science that's so new that you can't hardly find anything on the internet yet. But according to Rafe First, Neil Gershenfeld referred to it as asynchronous, logic automata, or ALA, which you know, programmable matter. So.
Okay, we'll watch that one too.
Yeah, that's right.
Programmable matter is a little easier on the.
I had some trouble.
Asynchronous logical automata.
Automata, yeah.
If you want to be more impressive.
I guess so.
You put it that way. Now, one of the things I saw there, Stephen, you had before the program, you had directed me to some links about that. Now, and the one line that stuck in my head on this programmable matter was. We're about 20 years out from the Star Trek replicator. Now, was that Gershenfeld who said that, or was that Brian Wang's comment on that, or do you know?
I think that was Rafe First who said that.
Oh, okay.
And it was being quoted by Brian Wang. And I guess, you know, if you have a prototype, I think everyone at the Unconference would be interested in seeing that.
Anyone doing cutting edge work in this, definitely bring your replicator prototype. Absolutely, we want to see it. We want to see it in action. What do you think of that prediction, Christine? Does that sound does that sound completely out of bounds, or is that possible?
You know, I've having tracked this field now for so many years, I tend to really avoid making specific date projections just because I know how difficult it is. And I think the longer you track the field, the more you get that way. But we have to remember, and this is very hard for all of us to remember really, that if we in fact are on an exponential curve, even if you've been feeling, gosh, things have not been going as fast as I would like, you can be surprised by how fast they end up going. So, and that's just something that we humans are just very bad at feeling in our guts. So I try to keep an open mind, even though sometimes I think, gee, I wish things would go faster, then I have to remember, you know, you can be surprised in the other direction as well. So I don't put numbers on things. I find that very difficult to do, but I try to remember very, very much that it's possible that we're going to see some very fast progress. We cannot rule that out.
We can't rule it out, and it could happen much faster than we expect. And I guess the point of a prediction like that is that even 20 years from now would be a lot sooner than anyone than most people expect. A development like that to occur. If it did occur in that time frame, that would be way outside most people's range of when they expect something like that to happen.
Phil, can I give you a couple of examples of stories that surprised me exactly that way? I mean, this is stuff that we have now, and I had no idea we were this far along.
No, Stephen, we don't want to get into that.
Well, I'm going to jump in anyway.
Yeah, no, it's enough. You can do whatever you want.
Smart insulin. This is just fascinating. You embed insulin in a molecule and it sits there idly in the bloodstream until it's needed. That way you can't, it makes it very difficult to overdose with this, which is always the problem with someone who's diabetic and needs to take, regular injections. This way you can kind of load up on these things and then they're used when they're needed. And so, it helps stabilize blood sugar, and so that's a big deal.
That is amazing, and this is in trial. It's being used now. Where are they?
Yes, it's in trial, and it's in the MIT Technology Review published the article, and I'm going to put the link in the chat room now. Now, the other story was, I thought, equally cool. They basically taking bacteria and altering it to make it sort of a bacterial nanobot, and then piloting that through the bloodstream of animals, I assume, with MRI, using MRI technology to just steer the stuff where you want it to go in the body. To me, that's just so cool.
Amazing. And what's the bacteria doing once they steer it around inside somebody's body?
Well, that's the cool thing. Anything you want it to do, I suppose. If there's one particular part of the body that needs medicine, you steer it to that part of the body. Maybe you have cancer in a certain place. So
that is amazing stuff. And both of those are the kinds of things that we write about on The Speculist or in Better all the time. These are actual news developments. These are not things that are being predicted.
Yeah, it sounds like science fiction, but it's the real deal right now.
Yeah. What's cool about that is that's the sort of thing that if you'd heard about it 20 years ago, you would have definitely said, well, that's science fiction. Maybe someday they'll have technology like that. And even if you hear about it today, if you describe that to someone, the average person in the street, they would say, yeah, that sounds like something. Maybe we'll have something like that someday, not the kind of thing that's actually happening right now. And one of the things that's really surprising is how much is happening that sounds absolutely incredible, that seems to be like something out of a science fiction story, and yet you have multiple instances of these kinds of things going on all the time, to the point that you were able to just pull two right out of the air to talk about here. I think if we spent some time, we could probably find quite a few more of those.
I would think that science fiction authors have got to really work nowadays to stay ahead.
Well, let me just
forget
ask,
about
PJ
it. It's hopeless.
PJ, is that the problem?
Yeah, it's a hard one because just when you think that, well, you know, you at least have several years before something hits, you discover, you know, crap, the thing I thought that I had several years, I better get this to press fast, otherwise I'm writing history. It's a tough one.
Yeah.
Amazing. Hey, well, there's a topic. Building on David's idea, we can talk about the obsolescence of employment for science fiction writers.
I'm gonna start having a cup out there. I should just collect coins and sit in the hallways at the M conference.
We'll
write for food.
this is why it's probably easier to go write, you know, fantasy maybe, or to do a I don't know, like a Star Trek tie-in or something like that. But to really try to engage with what's coming next, I think gets harder and harder because next is the whole idea of what's next is becoming so hard to track.
And also is going to be so world-changing, truly. The things that are coming down the pike, that everything you've just mentioned, but especially the idea of fabs and all the rest, are going to be so society-changing that it's hard to even get people to think in those terms. As Christine was saying before, you know, we're not great at assessing how fast things go, how good or bad things are, you know, and forget about being able to consider anything outside of the way we live. It's very hard to convince people that remember that shift from the agrarian age to the industrial age. Well, that's nothing.
Right.
From what we've got coming.
You know, Phil, I was thinking if any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic, then fantasy writers might be in trouble too.
Although, you know, until they start making unicorns, I think we're okay.
Yeah, but right. We can't rule those out, even in the
20th century. That's so true. I mean, unicorns are pretty close, so now that I think about it.
Yeah, synthetic biology and everything, I think that was crazy.
Exactly.
We can't rule out unicorns. I don't want to put words in your mouth, Christine, but is it fair to say we can't rule out unicorns?
Well, I think we could. I think we could probably do unicorns just with biotech, really.
Yeah.
Probably
yeah.
There with the unicorn if we wanted to. I mean, it would raise the whole why would you want to do that, I suppose. But it's certainly within the capability that probably already exists. This raises,
because it's cool. That's why you'd.
Well,
because
it would be pretty cool to see. It might not be cool for the unicorn, for the horse. Well, here I am. I'm a horse with a horn on my head. Now what do I do? What about this thought? This kind of relates to the whole issue of it's hard to keep up. How much of what we do at something like Convergence 08 is ready for regular public consumption, and how much of it is for kind of an insider group of people who spend a lot of time thinking about these kinds of things? You know, is it time for this message to get out to a broader audience, or is it already getting out to a broader audience? And does an event like this play a role in helping to get it out to more people, if that's even a good idea?
Yeah, I think it is. It's an excellent idea. Number one, I think it should. Number two, I think it is. I found just in the last several years a great increase in the number of mass media stories that one would consider futurist, H+, whatever you want to call it. And mostly because journalists are starting to realize, hold on, wait a second, this is really happening, this research is really happening, et cetera. And I think it's vitally important that people start to engage with these ideas for the reasons I was just saying, that, you know, things are going to be changing, and we need as many people to understand the choices that are going to be needed to be made as the future rushes to us. And in terms of coming to a place like Convergence, I think the wonderful thing about Convergence 08 is you can be both. You can be the insider expert, but as long as you come with an open mind, I think that it's a wonderful place for somebody who just wants to become introduced to these ideas, because they'll never have better access to the very people who are working with these ideas than at a place like this, where they can really ask questions and have very positive, interactive feedback.
Right, to actually be involved in the discussion, really contribute to the discussion. So it's not just a matter of becoming educated, but actually playing a part in the dialogue that is, to an extent, shaping this emerging reality of the world that we live in.
Absolutely. And what's interesting about the dialogue is it's very much the dialogue is needed two ways. It's not just that we hope we can educate people who aren't familiar with these concepts, but it's vitally important that the people working with these technologies understand what goes on outside the lab, outside Silicon Valley, outside the universities. Because there are tons of people who, if they understood what was happening, would have an opinion, and those opinions will matter. And if they have, the more educated they are, the more likely they will have a positive opinion from the point of view of the people working with technology.
Absolutely. Well, let me, I have some follow-ups to that, but let me say that this is Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. We're talking about Convergence 08, and we're sharing ideas for topics to be discussed there. If you'd like to join our discussion, we have live chat, or you can call us at 347-215-8972. Now, related to that, I think that the idea of providing a positive giving people the opportunity to respond positively to these kinds of ideas is hugely important. But I think there might even be more to it than that. Let me talk about something I read recently on Michael Anisimov's blog on Accelerating Future. He was talking about, I think the hypothetical question was, do we need somebody on Larry King? And the idea was, you know, in order to get to friendly AI, do we need that kind of broad-based public support? Does there need somebody to be somebody out there who's making those kinds of appearances, who has that level of public exposure, so that everyone in the country, everybody in the world, is talking about artificial intelligence? Or isn't this really something that can be accomplished on a much smaller scale with a much smaller group of people? And I think absolutely for the idea of just achieving friendly artificial intelligence or any particular technological development that you're looking to work towards, you can do it with a fairly small group of people and with this kind of elite insider kind of thing. But the question remains, yes, but if this happens, this would impact all of our lives. It wouldn't just impact the lives of the people who got to participate in doing it. Even the people who got to participate in doing it recognized that it would vastly impact the entire world. And therefore, because we're talking about things that potentially will completely change everyone's world, potentially everyone has the right to be a part in making these decisions.
Absolutely. Look, it's one of the reasons why Humanity Plus created H+ Magazine, which is our online magazine, which you can find at hplusmagazine.com, H-P-L-U-S magazine.
We'll be sure to put a link up there on the
Please do put a link on it, because one of the reasons we created the magazine was to do this very thing, and the magazine is really aimed at people who are completely new to these ideas. It's aimed at students. It's aimed at young people who might be interested in working in these technologies. And that comes back to the idea of taking these ideas to the public at large, because while you say, well, yeah, we could come up with these ideas on our own in our own little cloistered, you know, towers, I actually don't think so, because we need more people working on these things. We need more people, more young people involved in science. We need more people, especially young people, who are enthusiastic about these ideas, just so they know that these are options. And you know, certainly with H Plus Magazine, we're trying to get that word out to a broader audience. And so far, I mean, so far it's been pretty good. Our first issue has had, last count, I saw 415,000 hits.
That's great.
I'm happy.
That's very exciting.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
Christine, what do you think about that? Do we need somebody on Larry King? What does the role of the broader public what do they have to play in terms of the kinds of topics that we're talking about at Convergence 08?
I think Foresight's view from the beginning has been that it does pay off to do public outreach. I think one of the reasons that we're seeing some progress in nanotechnology, faster progress, is that there is more spending on nanotechnology, and that partly is due to the National Nanotechnology Initiative. And, you know, Foresight was out there for a good decade or more, actually, promoting nanotechnology to the public and making that word be a powerful, positive thing to the public. And that paid off in Congress when the day came to fund that initiative. Now, would we like to see more of that money devoted to molecular machine systems? Yes, we would. And I think we will. And that means we just have to keep pushing. So, yeah, I think reaching out to the public is important, and partly because we can see what happens when you don't, when you do a bad job. For example, we've had a lot of delays now in stem cell research here in the United States, and partly that's because of poor public education, and that extended all the way up to our president, unfortunately. So obviously there's an important need if you want to see science and technology advance in positive directions to do really good public education.
And I think with an election occurring this week, it really drives the point home that that if you're looking to the kinds of changes that we're talking about at Convergence 08, if you're looking to the kinds of things that PJ is talking about in Humanity Plus magazine, that ultimately these things do belong to all of society, and all of society is going to have a say in them one way or another. And one positive way is by choosing leadership that is tuned into these ideas and that is ready to support positive technological change. As close to a political statement as you'll ever hear from me, Stephen. What do you think?
Yeah, that's about as close as we get around here.
Yeah.
We avoid it like the plague normally. I was just, you know, I was thinking about the idea of having a guy on Larry King or something with these ideas. It seems to me that some of these ideas, not in a scholarly or organized way, but some of these ideas seem to be filtering into popular culture. It seems like every other show on television now is about, you know, some person that's got some special gift. They're a genius, or, you know, if you're not dealing with superheroes of some sort, you got some guy like the Mentalist who's crazy smart. And sometimes, you know, I think some of the ideas are played with in fiction in those ways, and the public is exposed to some of those ideas that way.
Well, yeah, and it certainly shows that people are familiar with these ideas now. I mean, because if they're showing up in all the TV shows, they're showing up in the movies, and you see references to nanotechnology nowadays. I mean,
right.
Time was you never heard of that, and now you do. So, in some ways, it's kind of filtered into the unconsciousness, maybe to the public consciousness. But I wonder if.
Christine probably groans at a lot of these things that she sees on television, but I'm guessing.
Actually, I did initially in the early days, but I've become much more blasé about it now, and I think now just even if there's a grain of useful information, even if it's embedded in perhaps some confusion, I think it still pays off in the long run.
Yeah.
Because it's pushing us in the direction where we're at least comfortable talking about these things, if nothing else. We're at least not shocked by the idea, right? It's mm-hmm. at least an idea that we can entertain once you reach that mm-hmm. point. Of course, you talk about TV shows. We should mention the show we've talked about before. It's actually a sitcom, which is The Big Bang Theory, kind of a watershed moment in in television, a TV show about a bunch of geeks. And they're, I mean, they're funny, of course, because it's a sitcom, but they're not the butt of the joke. They're the heroes of the show. And also the butt of the joke at the same time. But it's a great thing that it's a show about four really smart guys, and some smart women too. But I mean, it centers on them, and that's perceived as sufficiently interesting in and of itself that you could do a whole TV show about it. They don't have to be football players or you know, pilots or you know something glamorous like that. They're all physicists, and yet they're the center of a TV show. And I think that's a really positive step that popular entertainment has taken.
Well, I call that the geekification of the culture, and it really is a geekification. We're a culture where Bill Gates and Steve Jobs are at the pinnacle, and everyone else responds to their products, their ideas, et cetera. And we now can't function without some of those products or ideas. So if we're interacting with their products, we have to be a little bit of a geek too.
Right. Yeah, it's gotten in, hasn't it? I mean,
it's funny because it's true, and we only know it's true because we're geeks also, you know.
Yeah,
right.
We get to laugh at our own geekiness when we watch things like, you know, Big Bang Theory.
So so if you had to be one of the guys, which one would you be?
Oh, definitely Leonard. He's got a chance with the girl across the hall. Sheldon has no chance at all.
I'm sorry, I'm going a different way. I'm going to say I want to be Wolowitz because he's just got this perfect, comfortable level with his life, you know. I mean, he knows he's awesome. He dresses the way he wants to, and he's got this confidence that I just find very, very endearing. Plus, that haircut is pretty hard to beat. Now, Michael, last chance for ideas for the conference from the chat room.
Yeah, I think Matt had a good one, and it was interesting because the chat and the discussion were sort of converging at one moment there. But Matt suggested a topic about virology and viruses in general. And I tried to draw him out a little bit and asked, you know, like weaponized viruses or, you know, measles as the cure for cancer or what? And he said, yeah, all of the above. And then, okay, David Ray suggested that, and this is right where you guys were talking about the same thing. Okay, David Ray said, yeah, this is a good place to have a discussion about the appropriate role of the public sector financing and even perhaps regulating nanotech.
Okay, well, definitely. Obviously that's an issue of great importance both to the regular participants in Foresight Nanotech, and I believe the Center for Responsible Nanotech is another one of the groups either sponsoring or supporting this event, and that sort of issue is sort of their focus as well.
We'll be covering, in particular, in terms of sort of regulation, we'll be covering a new concept called open source sensing or open physical security, which takes the position that we should apply open source principles to more of these issues. And I think that's been a very popular concept, a lot of interest in that, and I think we'll be exploring that pretty thoroughly at the UN-conference.
That sounds great. So anything else, Michael, from the chat room? Sounds like some of the stuff that they're looking for will be covered at the conference.
Yes, and then, of course, there was just me acknowledging that, yes, you and Stephen are geeks.
Guilty as charged.
Well, we won't talk about which character you would be from, if only time permitted. But sadly, we're going to have to wrap it up. I can't believe how quickly the time has gone by. But I want to say a very, very big thank you to our two special guests, Christine and PJ. Thanks for being with us. It's always a pleasure to have you on the program, and you're welcome to come back and talk with us anytime. Look forward to seeing you both in a couple of weeks.
Likewise.
Well, thanks, Phil. And thank you, Stephen and Michael and PJ. It's been great, and I hope to see as many of you as possible in 2 weeks.
All right. Well, for those of you listening who are interested, we have a link directly to the registration page at the Speculus. So if you go to our show notes, you will see information. You'll see a link to the Convergence 08 website. Consider going. It's 2 weeks from yesterday, I believe, the 15th and 16th of November. It's in the computer. Tell me again what that is, PJ.
Computer History Museum.
The Computer History Museum in Mountain View, California. Looking forward to seeing a lot of you there. Hope you can put the word out, and we look forward to seeing a great group and having a fantastic time. Okay, Stephen, what have we got going on music-wise this evening?
The band is Bells for Her, and the song is Oh Dear.
Okay, we're going to listen to Oh Dear by Bells for Her. Thank you for your contributions this evening, Stephen. Michael, thanks to you and to all our friends in the chat room. And to everyone listening, we thank you for being part of Fast Forward Radio, and we look forward to being with you again very soon. Until then, good night.